All right. Welcome, guys. Welcome to the very first edition, the first 2021-2022 edition of the A10 Talk podcast. I'm your host, Sam Basil, joined alongside A10 Talk contributors Daniel Frank and Anthony Morelli. How are you guys doing tonight?
I am doing great. It is great to be back for season two of the A10 Talk podcast. I have missed doing these, and I'm just ready for the season to get going. How about you, Anthony?
Yeah, we're in October. The leaves are falling from the tree. I kind of want to staple them back up there. I'm not ready for the cold weather, but with the cold weather comes great basketball, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, and it's going to be a great season. So we started this podcast this week because this Saturday marks officially 1 month until the college basketball season tips off, so there's no better time to start than now. So before we talk about, you know, kind of 2021-22 as a whole, let's kind of go back to March of 2021. Last season saw the Bonnies and VCU represent the conference in the national championship tournament, while Davidson, Dayton, Richmond, and St. Louis all played in the NIT. Now, the Bonnies and VCU were both first-round exits. Would you consider last season a good year for the conference?
I would say it was not the Atlantic 10's best year. I don't think most conferences would say that last year was their best year. It is also worth putting the asterisks on the VCU first round exit for the obvious COVID reasons, which it of course, the one team to not make it to the first day of the dance was an Atlantic 10 school. It was not the A10's worst season. I know there was a tremendous amount of discussion throughout all of conference play. Are we even going to get a second team in? And we did. We avoided that one bid league kind of status. So in that regard, you know, as long as the conference continues to move forward this year, It was a decent season.
So I think, you know, we had some teams that were ranked last year, which is always exciting. That's important, right? Because I'm going to look at it from a broad view. I'm not just going to look at the tournament, which was a disappointment, right? St. Bonaventure gets bounced. They're the best team in our conference, and they get handled pretty easily, especially in terms of March Madness. And then you look at VCU. Of course, that's the only team that has a COVID issue after the conference had literally changed the A10 tournament to avoid that situation, and we still ran into that situation. So that's a little bit of bad luck. But if you look at it, like, we had teams like Richmond, who I believe they were ranked, or they were almost ranked. My memory's a little foggy, but they were playing very well, beating very good teams in the beginning of the year, and then they fall off a little bit. St. Louis, another team everyone was very excited about, potentially could have been ranked, and they fall apart to some degree, and they were a little bit of a disappointment. And so I think the conference could have had a stronger year, but if you look at COVID, we had a lot of teams shine bright at different points of the season. Wasn't not consistent, but there was always a hot A10 team to talk about. And I think the conference from that standpoint kind of benefited from it, because we always had a team being talked about in national circles.
Yeah. You bring up a good point. You know, Richmond, like you said, they pulled off that win against Kentucky very early on in the year. And, you know, although Kentucky did not have a great year, so that win kind of diminished as the weeks went by, Richmond stayed in the top 25 for a very decent portion of conference play. So going into 2021, what's the goal for this conference? Is it to finish with a team in the top 25? Is it to get three bids in the NCAA tournament? Or is it, like Anthony, you said, to kind of just stay in that national discussion?
I think the goal is always three bids. It has to be the only goal, because with the way that the conferences, and we're going to talk about this later, the way the conferences are realigning and these teams are starting to really come together and find like-minded programs to solidify a conference and pretty much secure as many spots as they want. Now, you could look at the Texas A&M thing and the Texas move and Oklahoma move as a football move. But who says that teams or schools don't make their decision based on basketball moves? I mean, the ACC is really a basketball conference. If you look at the success it has, I mean, their football program, it's Clemson, and that's about it. So the A10 needs to solidify as many spots as possible in the tournament, because that's how it gets majority of the money, is how many schools can we put into the round of 32 or to the Sweet 16 that helps the conference get money, and it helps them maybe lure programs like Temple, who are a little bit more football forward, to be more basketball forward, come back to the A10, which is always my goal. So I think three bids always has to be the number one priority. It means the most amount of money. It means the most amount of media coverage. And it's probably the most important thing for the conference.
No, I think you bring up an absolutely good point. I mean, especially if you look at the ACC's moves, The most recent additions, and correct me if I'm wrong, were Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and Louisville. None of those are football schools. I mean, Pitt, you can make the argument for, but they're irrelevant to both football and basketball. So there you go. Louisville most certainly was a basketball move, and they have benefited from the ACC. But I think that's certainly a good point. And the Atlantic 10, with maybe the exception of UMass with their football and their hockey, which just won the national championship, shout out to Amherst. Every single school in the Atlantic 10, their men's basketball programs funds every single sport besides men's basketball at their school. So, for example, George Mason, where I go to school, men's basketball funds women's basketball. It funds soccer. It funds lacrosse, baseball, softball, etc. So from the top down at the conference, that has to be the focus of this is where the money's coming from. Money talks. We've seen it happen time and time again. This is the world we live in. And for the money to show, they got to be successful. They got to get these teams in the tournament. So I think absolutely. And I think there's a good crop of teams that can make it in. And I'm curious to hear what you all have to say about what teams you all think can make the tournament this year.
Yeah, definitely. We'll be getting into all of that just a little bit later, talking about conference realignment, talking about potential bids for 2022 March Madness. But first, you know, this was kind of a big offseason for a couple A-10 teams, most notably in the head coaching department. So we're going to be seeing two new head coaches in the Atlantic 10 Conference this year. First up at Fordham, Kyle Neptune, former assistant coach at Villanova, and George Mason. It's going to be the first year under Kim English, who was his last job was an assistant coach at Tennessee. So let me just get your quick reactions for these new head coaches, starting with Anthony. How do you feel about Kyle Neptune heading over to the Bronx?
So this is funny. I'm the one who doesn't have a stake in the game because neither of these teams are mine. So I'll keep it really high level. Anyone that comes from Jay Wright, I love. Jay Wright is the best coach in college basketball right now, ever since Coach K retired, and he's better than Calipari in my eyes. I'm sure that will trigger some people, but I really don't care because I think Jay Wright has turned Villanova into a powerhouse and one of the better conferences in college basketball. And they're so like, I look at Ashley Howard at LaSalle and if you really looked at the facilities at LaSalle, the campus at LaSalle, I know the goal of standard fellows would not like me that much for saying it, but it is a hindrance to the recruiting at the program. But my point is Ashley Howard has actually done a pretty decent job at LaSalle with the things he has at his disposal, the assets he has. And so I think that really speaks to the coaches of Jay Wright. And so Billy Lank's Jay Wright guy too, in theory. They always have positive energy. They're really good recruiters. They're really good player coaches. I think that just all comes from Jay Wright being a player's coach, really understanding his guys, allowing them to stay for 4 years. Or making sure they do stay for 4 years. They buy into him, he buys into them. And so I think anyone from that coaching tree is a great addition.
Yeah, I would say my biggest question for Neptune, and I think I would have this question regardless of what person took over the helm at Fordham, is what are they going to do differently than what Jeff Neubauer did and what every other coach at Fordham has done prior to that as well? How is this approach going to be different? And frankly, how are they going to get Fordham out of the basement? And I think it's a discussion we've had, I know, multiple times last year. Fordham is a sleeping giant in this league. It is in the largest network based off of being in New York City. Fordham being successful will be the single biggest addition to the Atlantic 10, in my opinion. And so the question is, how do we get Fordham there? And I would love more than anything to see Fordham be competitive in this league again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being a Fordham guy myself, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there are two advantages to Kyle Neptune becoming the new head coach at Fordham. One, Anthony, like you said, adopting Jay Wright's play style. You know, Fordham over these last couple of years, especially in the Neubauer era, were really focused on defense and just slowing down the basketball game. I mean, they were playing against schools where they'd be getting, you know, okay wins, like their win against Dayton last year, but they'd be beating schools 59-56, 57-41. I mean, not really, you know, kind of the fast-paced basketball that you're used to in the college games these days. And so I think Kyle Neptune is really going to bring that to Fordham basketball. I mean, we're going to have to see this year, you know, because a lot of guys have stayed over from the Neubauer era. So it might take some time for them to adjust to that new system. But I think it can only help Fordham in the long run. And that second thing, like that you were talking about, Daniel, is Fordham is a New York school, And Kyle Neptune is a New York guy. I mean, New York in general has, you know, kind of been considered, you know, all time as the mecca of basketball. I mean, it's produced some of the best talent. The basketball scene there is just so entrenched in New York culture. And so I would love to see Kyle Neptune, you know, bringing in new recruits to the school from, you know, prominent New York basketball schools. So they're not like a, you know, a Malachi Smith and going over to another A-10 school like Dayton. So, you know, I think it's going to be a shaky first year for the Rams at first, but I think, you know, their stock can only rise in the Atlantic 10.
Can I add something real quick? And I want to add this point, and I think this is really interesting, is the fact that a lot of the Catholic schools in the conference don't have as much money to work with, don't have the same facilities as the state schools. I was a former athlete. I see it myself. I've been to the URI has really nice facilities. George Mason has really nice facilities. And schools like Dayton, which is a private school, has been able to build a nice new stadium. But Fordham, you know, it's so hard to build in New York City. And I totally get why it's a little bit of a struggle. But I want to bring a shining light to what you just said about the recruiting. What other colleges are in New York City that are dominating college basketball? Maybe Syracuse is stealing a couple of recruits here and there, but they're recruiting nationally most of the time, and they have to fit a certain scheme of the 2-3 or the 3-2, whatever Boeheim does. What, Seton Hall? They're a pretty good program, but they're not Villanova. It's not like St. Joe's is dealing with Villanova in Philadelphia. Seton Hall's not as good as that. And St. John's is nothing. So, I mean,
I will say, though, St. John's likes to pull from New York, though. They like to pull.
Seton Hall is New Jersey, though, and you have a tough time selling that to New York City as a New York
school. I know, but Seton Hall does get people from New York. I mean, yes. It's in the New York area, East Orange is. So my whole point is Fordham's kind of got the market to themselves. I think it is a shining light. You can do a lot of things there. And so I think it is worth being excited about.
You mentioned Fordham's, you know, these Catholic colleges, you know, struggling with the facilities. I think that is something Fordham kind of struggles with. Not really from a money standpoint, but from a space standpoint. I don't know if any of you are too familiar with the Fordham's campus, but it's tight. It's a nice campus, but it's tight right in the Bronx. And so there's really nowhere to build. That's kind of been a problem for the football program, the basketball program, et cetera. But I mean, you're also in New York. I mean, St. John's has that contract at Madison Square Garden. I see no reason why Fordham can't, you know, play a couple games at the Barclays Center every year, which they are doing this winter against Miami. But it would be great to see them, you know, maybe have the Barclays Center be kind of a home away from home venue, you know, and especially because the alumni network at Fordham is so New York based. You would totally have fans at that arena, you know, maybe not selling out, but you'd get a good contingency. There's one specific thing that I want to ask you, Daniel. John Rothstein reported this on October 1st. Dave Paulson is going to be stepping into the Fordham program after leaving George Mason last year in kind of an unspecified advisory role. What are your thoughts on that as someone who follows a lot of George Mason basketball?
You know, it's funny. You read my mind. I was just about to jump in with this because I feel like this is a perfect transition to our next topic we'll get to in a minute about Kim English. But there's actually a one-for-one swap, if you want to call it that, because not only is Dave Paulson going to Fordham, but Dennis Felton is now an assistant coach at George Mason, and he had most recently been an assistant under Neubauer at Fordham. So you've got an interesting dynamic there of this one-for-one trade, if you will. As far as Paulson goes, Paulson's not been an assistant in many years, if memory serves. I believe he had been, I know he'd been at Bucknell before he came to George Mason. So it's always interesting to see how those types of head coaches transition back to an assistant role, associate role, whatever Paulson's going to do, you know, at Fordham. I mean, the most recent example of this would be Maurice Joseph. I believe he went to Fairleigh Dickinson is where he landed after he left George Washington and was an assistant there, but obviously much younger coach, much different stage of his career. So just from that perspective, what Paulson does and how he fits in, I mean, Paulson's an energetic dude. Fordham better have a hell of a lot of Mountain Dew on tap. I will say that much because the man lives on Mountain Dew, so they better be ready for that. But just from a basketball standpoint, I think it's going to be interesting to see the dynamic that he brings. And frankly, I'm curious to see what the reaction is going to be the first time that Fordham comes back to Fairfax. Is Paulson going to get booed? I mean, I don't know what to expect. And Paulson was not beloved by the time that he left Fairfax. I will say that much. And as far as Felton goes, I don't know how Felton was, you know, received when he, during his time at Fordham. I don't expect quite the same level of tension there, perhaps, as there is between Paulson and Mason fans, at least some of the diehard ones. But it's an interesting storyline, I think, to see as the season goes along.
Would you say Paulson's departure at Mason was seen as kind of like a betrayal? I mean, you say that the, you know, the opinion on him kind of soured. I mean, was it kind of like a good riddance, or was it a, you know, yeah.
No one was sad to see Dave Paulson, the coach, leave. I think some people were sad to see Dave Paulson, the person, leave. I don't think by the time the season ended, a single person in Fairfax, Virginia was sad to see him leave as head coach of George Mason. I'll say that.
Wow. Well, you know, since no one was sad to see Dave Paulson leave, how were George Mason fans feeling about, you know, Kim English stepping into the role?
I have to say, it's been hard not to get caught up in the level of excitement and energy that is exuding from this program. I am trying to keep a level head, especially as also a GW writer / diehard GW fan as well, who got caught up in the Jamie and Christian hype when he was first hired and now is not totally in love with Christian. Not to say that he needs to be fired just yet, but, you know, the jury's out on Christian. I think most people would agree with that. So I'm trying to not jump full on into Kim English and crown him the savior of George Mason until he's coached one game, at least at the Division I level as a head coach. I will say, though, in Fairfax, people are excited about this guy. He brings energy. I had the privilege, and I say privilege, to sit courtside for their open practice they had a couple weekends back. And I've been to many basketball practices before at Mason at different levels. The energy that practice had was exactly the same as I have seen games, like late season conference games in February with games that matter. It was that level of intensity. And I think that's a word that any of the Giant Killer guys, the By George guys that have been to practices the whole summer would agree with me, that just the level of intensity, the competitiveness that the guys are playing with is something that demands attention. I'm not sure how successful George Mason's going to be their first year. I think a genuine optimistic number would be 13-5 in conference play. That puts them somewhere like fifth place maybe in the conference, but it's exciting. I gotta say, it is exciting to be a George Mason basketball fan, to be a student of George Mason right now. Plus, I gotta shout out the new women's staff as well. I mean, Vanessa Blair Lewis is bringing the excitement for the women's program as well. So there's just a whole lot of new opportunity in Fairfax right now for basketball, and I love it.
You talk about the energy, but was there anything in that open practice kind of on the X's and O's side that you saw that was like a noticeable improvement from Paulson?
The attention to detail was simply, you could not miss it. I mean, anytime that any guy made a small mistake, it was not glossed over. And to be blunt about it, after practice, three of the guys from the 06 Final Four team came to speak to the team. And Lamar Butler, one of the three guys that came to speak, basically called out Paulson without saying his name, saying, "We've been to practices in the past. We saw stuff that was let go, let slide. The attention to detail level was not there," was basically what they were insinuating with the Paulson coaching staff. And they were very pleased with the attention to detail that Kim English and his staff was demanding of this team. Additionally, I think just looking at Jamal Hartwell, I think it was someone that it was hard not to look at during the practice, that he has a 100% 24/7 green light to shoot the three from anywhere on the floor. That was abundantly clear. That, and Josh Oduro is ready to take the next step. I know we'll talk about George Mason more as a team, and we do individual team breakdowns later on before the season gets rolling. But there's some interesting pieces. I'm not saying George Mason's going to win the Atlantic 10. I'm not going to say they're going to get a double bye. But they're a team that I think is going to surprise some people in a way that they have not since they joined this conference. I'll say that much.
Wow. I mean, that's a pretty great preview so far. I mean, hopefully you've got a lot saved for when we get into specific team previews in the next couple of episodes. But Anthony, you know, so last season, Tennessee, I would say, was kind of not unexpected, but a kind of a breakout team in the SEC. I mean, they were frequently in the top 25, in the top 10. What about Tennessee do you hope Kim English brings to George Mason basketball?
You know, it's funny. I watched St. Joe's played Tennessee, so I kind of saw them play the Hawks. And the one thing that jumped out, and this is going to be hard to translate to the A-10, but was the size of Tennessee. I mean, we play Villanova. Villanova was a higher ranked team, not as big as Tennessee. Tennessee had some legit size, especially at the wing, had some like 6'8", 6'9" guys running around shooting threes, legitimate size. And so I think if George Mason can recruit, they're in DC, great area to recruit from. So many great players come from DC. I think that's the biggest part. I think that's what would benefit George Mason the most. I mean, we're talking about they had the rookie of the year last year, but how many great George Mason players have we talked about since they joined the A-10? I mean, I come from a program, St. Joe's. We have a lot of NBA talent in the NBA, and that's thanks to Phil Martelli, of course, but he was able to find really great players and translate them and make them, you know, effective, at least pro talent. And, you know, that benefits the team when you can do that. So I think when I watched Tennessee, that's what I saw. And I hope that that can happen for George Mason.
Excellent. And, you know, so, you know, with this, a lot of changing in the Atlantic 10, I mean, there are some Atlantic 10 mainstays, you know, in terms of players, you know, who are kind of trying to make their last final push in the conference this season. So going over into specific players, are there any seniors that you guys think will have a breakout year or, you know, are looking for that final chance to, you know, cement their legacy at their school or make a final push, you know, for their NBA draft stock this season? Starting off with you, Daniel.
You know, I was looking at the list of players as I was making notes for this show, and I was struggling to find just one. I kind of had a couple bunches of guys that I chose just in case anyone else, you know, picked one. The three I'm going to have to go with, and forgive me if they're slightly obvious, are Jacob Gilliard, Nick Sherrod, and Grant Golden at Richmond. I know we talked briefly about Richmond earlier in the show already, but Richmond was a team last year. And granted, they had a big injury before the season even started. My memory is escaping me which player it was. But they were dealt a blow before the season started, but they still had expectations that they were going to make the NCAA tournament. And they did not meet that expectation. And, you know, this group has been, I mean, Gilliard, Sherrod, and Golden, it feels like Grant Golden has been at Richmond for like 7 years, I swear. But, you know, they've not gotten Richmond over that hump yet. And I know that the whole Fire Mooney Mafia has died down quite a bit, especially with how last season went. But if these guys, their legacy wants to be that they not only brought Richmond back to the promised land, but they stuck by their coach who they have defended verbally and said, hey, this is our guy. The best thing that they can do to cement his legacy is to give him job security, frankly, and get him back to the NCAA tournament. I think they're capable of it. It's just, can they get over that hump? And I think that's the three that I really want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I had Grant Golden as my number one. I mean, I think Richmond in general, like I agree with you in the sense that, you know, doing this research, I had a hard time finding some senior and graduate students, a lot of senior and graduate students in A-10 rosters. I mean, I feel like this is a relatively young conference, but I mean, Richmond, every time they try to get something going, I think they really got hit with COVID, you know, a lot of delays, a lot of cancellations. So I think this is going to be a huge bounce back year for Richmond and, you know, kind of do or die.
So I actually picked someone who is a little different than you guys. I picked Javonte Perkins. And the reason why I picked him is because he transfers into St. Louis and, you know, they haven't really reached the success we always want. Like, I just think about last year, really good team, and they just couldn't get over the hump. And then the year before, they were a good team, and COVID shut everything down. We never really got to see what they were capable of. And so I think this is, for me, it's not like I'm saying he has never performed. He's played well. I think it's more of a, I want him to play well so that St. Louis does well, because I still think that there's a chance for them to, you know, the conference doesn't have many leaders in regards of team leaders. We have St. Bonaventure as the favorite, but if we look down the list, we're seeing injuries and we're seeing teams climbing and falling. And so I think there's real opportunity there for him to show his stuff and to bring his team some wins.
Yeah, I mean, I think SLU also fits in that category of, you know, a lot of potential left on the court, you know, after the A-10 tournament. And let's move on to kind of on the opposite side, you know, some of your favorite freshmen that are coming into the conference this season. I mean, for me, I think the strongest recruiting class comes with Dayton. You know, obviously the centerpiece of that is Deron Holmes. You know, he's the highest ever ranked recruit to sign with the Flyers. The first one they've ever had in the top 50. The dude's a 6'8 forward, but you know, he's as good of an all-around package as a school like Dayton can get. I mean, he can shoot, he can defend. I think he's great, as well as Malachi Smith, the younger brother of Scoochie Smith, like I was saying before, a Bronx recruit that I think will, you know, he'll sell out games in the Rose Hill gym. So I'll be excited to see him, you know, when they come to Fordham.
You know, it's funny. This is probably the year that I struggled to keep up with freshmen recruiting classes just based off the sheer number of transfers that there were in the portal. I was trying to keep up with that the whole summer, and it was very difficult to kind of keep up with the freshman class. So I admit to not being the most knowledgeable in this as I would like to be. However, I got to agree with you about Dayton. Malachi Smith is a name that I remember hearing about long before last season. I mean, that Dayton guys had on their radar, and I know that he was someone that they were very excited to get. So I have to agree with you in that regard. I think Dayton is primed to retool and rebuild and be right back in the conversation. I know last year did not sit well with the people in Dayton and how they did. And I know that there's a big push to get back to where they were the year before. So I think they're heading in the right direction.
So I'm going to be a little bit of a homer, but I think it's Eric Reynolds. And the Dayton class is good, but Eric Reynolds was, I believe he was touching 4 stars when he committed to St. Joe's. And the minute he committed to St. Joe's, whoop, down to 3, because the system's kind of bogus and lame in that regard, because he didn't pick a big name school. But he's got talent. John Rothstein went to a practice and he tweeted out, Eric Reynolds is the real deal. And I think if he shares the ball with Jordan Hall in an effective way, apparently he's super athletic, like jumping out of the gym. There's a reason why he was that high of a recruit. And I know I'm not saying the Dayton kids are bad or anything like that, but I think I don't want to not go on this show and mention Eric Reynolds, because he's just as highly ranked or in that kind of conversation. I think that he deserves some viewership.
All great picks. And so, you know, a month away, we're starting a non-conference play. I think a lot of these A-10 schools have picked some really good schedules for this year. I mean, I've got 4 games on my radar, but first I would like to hear yours. Daniel, what would you say is, you know, the must watch non-conference game from an A-10 school this season?
Well, there's a couple ones that jumped right off the page at me. The first being, just because Richmond's a team, as I've already mentioned, that I have my eye on this season. I think they have 3 interesting games in a row here. Well, 2 of them are in a row. The first, so they're all the games in the Bahamas. They have Maryland, they play on the 25th, and then they play either Louisville or Mississippi State, as well as a game against NC State in December. I think those are 3 very interesting games. And I think we're going to get a good flavor of how Richmond's going to do. These are the types of games that the Atlantic 10 as a whole needs teams to win. I think that's I know something we talked about a lot 2-3 years ago is just missed opportunities. And I think the Atlantic 10 as a whole needs to capitalize on some of these big opportunities. Speaking of big opportunities, I don't remember the last time an Atlantic 10 school had a shot at knocking off the defending national champion. And VCU has a possibility at that. They open the battle for the Atlantis on November 25th against Syracuse. And then depending on what happens with their game and the other game, first round game, they have a shot at playing Baylor. That would be must-see television if there ever is any, to see VCU, who's arguably, in my opinion, one of the best A-10 schools when they're on a neutral floor, get to go up against Baylor. Why not? That's must-see television, I'll say that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, these preseason tournament games are so crucial for schools like the ones in the Atlantic 10. They're usually get huge national broadcasting because, you know, they're kind of not, I don't want to put down an A-10 school, but, you know, they're getting the national broadcast off of these, you know, Power 5 schools that are making an appearance. And there's always, you know, room for those little upsets. And I think an A-10 school would be the perfect team to get one of those early non-conference upsets, you know, right in November, right to get everyone talking about that school and the A-10.
Yeah, so I'm going to be a little bit of a homer again, because I think these are actually legitimate games. The first is LaSalle versus Villanova in the Palestra. I'm going to try to go to it. That is the pinnacle of college basketball. And LaSalle has a history of being very close with Villanova in the sense of scores when they play each other. St. Joe's does not get as close to Villanova as LaSalle does. For some reason, Penn and LaSalle always give Villanova a little bit of trouble. The last time they played, they didn't play last year, but they played 2 years before that, only 11 point difference. Year before that, 7 points, 9 points. That's actually pretty close, considering that when St. Joe's played Villanova, it's been 20 point gap, 12, 12, 41, 31 point gaps. This is with like DeAndre Bembry on the court. There's a 30 point gap between St. Joe's and Villanova. So LaSalle does play Villanova closely. A lot of alumni for LaSalle are going to be at that game. It's going to be a very good matchup, worth watching. And then for me, another one is going to be St. Joe's Temple. Why St. Joe's Temple? Because we want Temple to come to the Atlantic 10. Both St. Joe, here's a little bit of a narrative for you. St. Joe's is trying to move on from Phil Martelli. Temple's still trying to build from Fran Dunphy. Both programs are kind of at a pinnacle point in their building. Temple's at a pinnacle point of where will we go, maybe? Who knows if they leave their conference? And so it's kind of a nice way to gauge both teams and where they are in their build and how it also, they kind of both tie into the Atlantic 10. So I think those are two good games to look out for.
Yeah, I think you totally get a pass for being a homer this time, because I think people really need to, stop underestimating Philly as a serious, college basketball powerhouse. I mean, you've got so many great programs, top tier schools, mid-major schools, that any nationally televised game between two Philly schools is just going to be a great time. And so for me, I've got four. Penn State, UMass on November 15th. Big Ten school. The Big Ten was probably the best conference in basketball last year. So it'll be great to see UMass take them on. St. Louis versus Drake on December 22nd. Drake was a very interesting program last year. I think they were, just kind of poking the top 25 in the last couple of weeks. They finished out their conference run, I think 18-0 heading into the tournament. And, their fate, I felt like, was so closely tied with St. Louis on getting kind of one of those last few mid-major bids into the NCAA tournament. I think there were rumors about a potential St. Louis was trying to schedule a game after the Atlantic 10 tournament just to maybe rack up another win. And I think a potential opponent would have been Drake. So, I mean, that's definitely worth checking out. George Mason versus Georgia on December 18th. I mean, I've never really seen George Mason take on an SEC school like that. So that'll be fun to watch. But my biggest must-watch non-conference game, less for polling and bid reasons, but more just for kind of story and dramatic reasons, is Dayton versus SMU on December 8th. That's a rematch from last year, actually. And Dayton lost 66-64 on their home court, which was a pretty big blow, I think, to Dayton and their non-conference schedule. I think they were really trying to push the top 25 at that time, and SMU kind of just completely derailed that. So I would love to see Dayton come back and win that game, just to get that, revenge as a pride kind of thing. And so moving on, after the non-conference schedule, getting into conference play and the postseason, what are your, super knee-jerk reactions, your knee-jerk predictions for, how this conference is going to pan out? Your conference champ, your bids, and give me one team that you think is just going to, surpass expectations.
Well, for me, I think the conversation begins and ends with St. Bonaventure. If they live up to their expectations and do what they're supposed to do, now I don't think they're going to make the Final Four. I know there was an article that came out yesterday that said like eight dark horses for the Final Four, and there was St. Bonaventure at number eight. I don't think that that's quite their ceiling. I don't think they're 2020 Dayton. However, I think that it is in their hands to win this conference, and if it's up to them, the only team that's going to beat them is themselves, in my opinion, for outright conference champion. Now, that being said, I will go on the record, and I'm sure I'll get a whole lot of hate for this when they do, in fact, win the tournament, but I don't think they're going to win the conference tournament. I'll go on record saying that they'll win the regular season outright, and then they'll lose maybe first round semifinals in the conference tournament, because the one seed always does. As far as tournament teams, I have just a gut feeling, and maybe it's just because I'm a damn eternal optimist with this conference, that we're going to get back to three bids this year. I think we're going to get St. Bonaventure, VCU, and Richmond. I think those are the three that we're going to get here. And Richmond needs to prove to me that they can do this. And I'm not saying that they're a shoe-in, but I think they are that team. And I know VCU is a bit of a question mark right now with their injuries, whatever. Miss me with that. I'm sorry. I will never count out a VCU team again in my life. As long as they are alive and still being the Rams, I will never count out a VCU team. They're going to make the tournament. You can set your watch by it. It's just automatic.
And which team, maybe not necessarily a basement team, but, kind of one of those middle of the pack A-10 schools that you think will surpass expectations?
I have my eye on Davidson. I feel like Davidson, maybe they're not a middle of the pack. Maybe it's not quite fair to classify them that low. But I think they're a team that's just below the radar. They're not in that NCAA tournament conversation. You know, I probably would put St. Louis before them in a preseason ranking and put like maybe Davidson is sixth or something like that. I feel like Davidson is just has some nice pieces this year. And I just have a gut feeling about them that they're going to do some damage. They've been a little quiet for a little too long. And that doesn't happen very often in Davidson. You know, they were, as I recall, one of the only teams to beat St. Bonaventure's, I recall, last year. And I might be mistaken. It's been too long. Memory's not failing me. But, you know, I feel like Davidson's just going to take that step this year and be competitive again.
Awesome. And Anthony, you know, kind of your early conference picks?
Yeah, I was just doing some Googling. I'm trying to find out if Daniel's right about the win. But Daniel, I'll let you do your own research. I will say, I agree with you on Davidson. I have them at 5 in my preseason ranking. I think they're team to watch, but I'll give you my top three, no specific order, but this is the top three I see finishing in the conference: St. Bonaventure, St. Louis, and Dayton. We always think Richmond last year, they fall off. And then we want to say VCU. I like VCU. I root for VCU when I don't have like a horse in the race, but those injuries do concern me. And so I think we're going to look at some new teams returning to the top of the conference. And I think it's going to be St. Bonaventure, St. Louis, Dayton. That's my top three prediction. No specific order. I'll give you my hot take though, that I was thinking about. I think UMass is going to be better than we think. I think Trey Mitchell leaving is actually a little bit of a blessing on the program in the sense that they could be a little bit more creative with how they want to run the offense or how they want to play defense even. And so I think a player like Trey Mitchell, it's very nice to have them. You should never, you know, not want to have great talent like that. But if it comes to a detriment to how you play and how a coach can actually coach his guys and put them in the position to succeed and to win individually and as a team, I think this is a big addition by subtraction maneuver. And so I think UMass is actually going to be a sneaky good team. Probably top. I would see them finishing around 7 or 6. That's my hot take.
No, I think you bring up a great point about the addition by subtraction, especially when it comes to, I feel like this is a Bryce Harper situation, not to just go all Philly sports on you. Sorry, man, but I got to rep my Nationals, man. The Nationals weren't going to win till Harper was gone. And I also, while I'm here, want to correct myself before St. Bonaventure sends their full wrath of Olean at me. Davidson did not beat St. Bonaventure last year. I was mistaken. I will go on record correcting myself. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Yeah, that Bryce Harper comment got, you know, quite a physical reaction out of you. You want to take a second to?
That's my MVP. Are you kidding me? That's my MVP. Best player in the NL. I don't care.
On a team that didn't make the playoffs. They didn't make the playoffs.
Okay, got it. You just rode Scherzer all the way to the finals. I don't want to hear it. You had him coming out of the bullpen. Oh yeah, the ghost of the Nationals. I see him sitting in the bullpen doing nothing every night.
They still want a ring. Where's Harper's ring?
Yeah, well, you know, either way, you know, as a Mets fan, I don't think any of that's going to matter in the next couple of years once, you know, Steve Cohen spends $1 billion building a World Series roster. But before you guys can come at me for that, let's get into my predictions. I've got the A-10 as a 3-bid conference this year. The Bonnies are just way too good. I think all 5 of last year's starters are returning this year. That combo of Oshunoshuni and Kyle Lofton is just – it's just too good. I mean, it's almost unstoppable. I've also got St. Louis. I think they're going to be a great team this year. They've got a lot to prove coming out of last year. And Richmond, you know, they've been poking at the NCAA tournament for the past couple of years now. And I think Grant Golden and, you know, Coach Mooney are really going to want to have them take that next step. And Anthony, you know, for my team that's going to surprise, you might like this, but it's kind of the opposite of your take. I think UMass is going to take a step back this year, not just because of Trey Mitchell, but I think, you know, with the whole Trey Mitchell situation, there was, you know, kind of some lines drawn in the sand with head coach Matt McCall. So I think with UMass kind of draining in power a little bit, I think St. Joe's is going to fill that power vacuum this year. You know, last year they made kind of a, not a complete, but like an almost Cinderella run in the A-10 tournament last year. But, you know, I think Jordan Hall and Taylor Funk are a veteran, you know, solid duo in the A-10. So I think St. Joe's fans should really be excited about, you know, what they can cook up this year. And finally, you know, our last topic, kind of a broader outside A10 topic, but, you know, something I really wanted to, you know, have an outlet to talk about, conference realignment in the NCAA. So, you know, earlier this fall, there was, you know, a crazy, you know, situation in which Texas and Oklahoma basically decided that they're going to leave the Big 12 to go to the SEC. And now to fill those holes in the Big 12, we've got four teams, three from the American and then one from one being BYU. So Cincinnati, Houston, BYU, and one more. It's off the top. It's escaping me. But they're joining the Big 12.
UCF.
Thank you. They're joining the Big 12 from the American. And, you know, it's kind of gotten a lot of people, you know, questioning, is this not the end? What schools are moving where? And for us, you know, how does this affect the A10? Even if schools not leaving, I know a lot of people say it's a football move and the A10 is not really a football conference. I think only seven A10 schools have football teams. But how does this affect the A10 from a basketball standpoint? Just in terms of their relation to other conferences.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. I know there's been a lot of discussion, and the two biggest names that have been thrown around, we've already mentioned one of them tonight, is Temple. I feel like Temple's the obvious choice for them to come back home to the Atlantic 10. The other name that's been thrown around a fair amount is Wichita State. I find that personally to be a reach. I don't think Wichita State makes a whole lot of sense geographically, financially for them, having just made another big move not too long ago to the American from the OVC. Those are the two that I've heard talked about a lot. For the sake of this being a fun podcast, and let's just throw shit at the wall and see what sticks, I've got four names here that I want to throw out here, and you guys can tell me if I'm crazy or not. And they probably will never happen, but I think this would just be a fun discussion to have here. So you may notice a theme here, and this is not just because I am a Kentucky boy at heart, but three of these schools are Kentucky schools, and I think there's a reason for that. I'm going to start with Murray State. They are a powerhouse in the Ohio Valley Conference. They are Ja Morant University. That is enough said about that. But they have been a power in their conference for a long time now. They are always a team that if you see matched up on that 11-12 seed line in the NCAA tournament, they're always a hot pick to you know, as an upset. I think they make a lot of sense. I think expanding to the Ohio Valley region in general makes sense for the Atlantic 10. The next name I'm going to throw out there fills a very similar void is Northern Kentucky University, also from the Ohio Valley, I believe. They filled that Cincinnati void that is left by Xavier's departure many years ago to the Big East. They've made some significant investments in their athletic facilities. They have also become a power in their conference. They have been in the NCAA tournament for several years in a row. And I think, again, just feeling that the hole that Xavier left, I think they're a natural immediate rival for Dayton. I think they're a great fit. And then the third Kentucky school that I want to throw in here is Bellarmine. Now, I know that last year was their first year in Division I. They got a long way to go before they're anywhere close to the Atlantic 10 level. Give them 5-10 years, maybe then they'll be ready. But they play at Freedom Hall in Louisville, which, as anyone who knows old, you know, NCAA basketball knows, Freedom Hall is a mecca of college basketball. And who wouldn't want to see some A-10 hoops being played in Freedom Hall? I think that would just be phenomenal. And the fourth team I'm going to throw out here, and this might be a bit off the wall, is I think Iona deserves a look. They're another private New York City school. If Rick Pitino stays, can you imagine Rick Pitino in the Atlantic 10? What a storyline that would be. And, you know, they're a team that's looking like they're going to be here a while. If Pitino stays there, they will be a force in that conference forever, the Metro Atlantic. Give them a look. Let's see what happens. What do you guys think?
So it's funny, Daniel, I was thinking about the MAC, not the MAC, but the MAAC, the Metro Atlantic Conference. I think Monmouth would be a better poach. I think they were a little more consistent in basketball over the last few years. It's only because of Rick Pitino's return are we talking about Iona, and who knows how long he's going to be around for. But I feel like I don't have any schools in mind, but I want to say this. I think the A-10 is at a crux in the situation, in the sense that we look at the schools that are going to the Big 12 and they're kind of backfilling with the programs that are a little bit smaller, but they're growing and becoming larger, and they have to figure out their situation of, are we the conference of Kansas basketball? Or are we the conference of Oklahoma, you know, what was Oklahoma football. For the Atlantic 10, there are not many schools in our area that we can poach from other conferences that would make the conference better. And so I think, Daniel, you're very creative in going to those schools that you named. I give you a lot of credit, because if you look at in our area in the Metro Atlantic, you're pulling from those schools. We cannot steal from the Big East. No one is leaving the Big East to come and play with us. The NEC doesn't have any schools that we're willing to really poach from. Maybe some schools from the Patriot League, but they're not leaving the Patriot League, and I don't think they're going to make us better at basketball either. So I really think the A-10's kind of in a situation where it's, you know, who can we add to the conference? There's not many schools that fit the A-10 profile that really would join the A-10, and everyone else, as you said, are smaller schools that have somewhat established basketball, football programs, and are taking football as their priority rather than basketball. I mean, that's what Cincinnati and UCF are doing. They're not taking basketball number one. They're going football route. So I think that's where the A-10 finds it. It's hard. It's going to be hard to find schools that are basketball first oriented that aren't already in a really well-established conference.
Yeah. You bring up a great point about football being a top priority, which, you know, going back to earlier in the podcast, you guys talking about Temple, it's the number one reason why I cannot see Temple making that move back to the Atlantic 10. You know, as bad as your football team can be, I think FBS money is always going to beat Atlantic 10 money, you know, 10 times out of 10. And which is why, for the same reason, I think if we're ever going to see a school leave in the next couple of years, is going to be UMass. I mean, they've recently joined the FBS. They're currently an FBS independent. And while, you know, they're kind of having a tough time in that subdivision of football, I think they're owned 5 along with UConn, which who's owned 6. No school like that, unless you're Notre Dame, is going to be an independent for long in the FBS. So, you know, when that day comes, when UMass picks a conference to join, I think they'll be taking all of their other athletic programs, including basketball, with them. In order to fill that void, I laughed, Daniel, when you mentioned Iona, because the first thing that came to my mind was the MAC. The MAC is the perfect conference regionally and based on level of play that the Atlantic 10 could try and pull some talent from. Iona would be great, obviously, with the Rick Pitino connection. It would be a great rival for Fordham, you know, both being New York area schools. Fordham is, you know, a Metro North train right away from Iona. And especially because, you know, I think Rick Pitino was kind of on the short list for a lot of Fordham fans for coming in to replace Jeff Neubauer. I think, you know, I will die on this hill that I think if Fordham, you know, was a little bit more proactive in removing Jeff Neubauer, Rick Pitino would be coaching at Rose Hill Gym. I firmly stand by that. But, you know, if Iona doesn't, you know, they don't want to leave the MAC, they want to keep winning titles at the MAC, you know, getting those key NCAA tournament bids, which I think they can do, I think Manhattan or Fairfield would be great complements to the Atlantic 10. In terms of basketball, Manhattan is kind of considered Fordham's, you know, biggest rival. That's the other Bronx D1 school. They try to play each other at least once a year, every year in conference play. So I think that would be a super fun, you know, inner city rivalry between two Atlantic 10 teams. This might be a little bit of a reach because I just don't think they're at that point in their development money-wise or facilities-wise, but I think Jared Grasso's Bryant University team is almost on par with kind of like a lower-level Atlantic 10 team. What they're missing for me is just, you know, the gym and the notoriety. Not that you know, you need to be a top team to be in the A-10, but I think they're just under that threshold. And if, you know, Jared Grasso can keep the Bulldogs afloat, keep getting them bids in the NCAA tournament, I think they're very poised for a move out of the NEC.
I do think something that we can probably all agree on is any lower major school that comes up to the Atlantic 10 has to come with a quality facility. Facilities are the new currency in recruiting these days, both recruiting freshmen and recruiting transfers. And, you know, we've mentioned LaSalle already tonight and Tom Gold Arena. You know, and it's not something that gets talked about a lot in the Atlantic 10. I think any school that needs to be ready to come to the Atlantic 10 has to have a decent basketball facility to even be remotely considered.
What about some schools from, so I said the Patriot League. I think if there's a Patriot League team we would try to go after, it's Lehigh, because they fit that mold really well, but I don't think that's ever going to happen.
What they about have a any- terrible facility though.
Yeah, but they've got room to build if they really got the endowment. I don't know if you've ever been to Lehigh, but they've got a ton of space. What about any Colonial Conference teams? Is there anyone worth looking there? I don't know if James Madison's not a very good basketball program, but they're a state school. And maybe if they came to the Atlantic 10, they could fulfill that requirement. Or I don't think William & Mary could ever do that, but maybe Delaware. That's another one that I'm thinking of. They're not really that great at basketball though, but I think that's another state school that you can kind of entice to come. And if they get into the Atlantic 10, maybe that helps elevate them a little bit more too.
No, and this might be my bias as a Long Island guy, but I mean, if we're talking facilities and we're talking ability, I mean, I would have to go Hofstra. You know, their gym could be a bit better. You know, they could get some, you know, better recruits, make some better pushes in the Colonial over the next couple of years. But if you want to look to expand, especially in the New York market, I think Hofstra is a great spot. You know,
well, didn't they win the conference tournament in the 2020 season that got canceled due to COVID? Didn't they win the CAA?
I believe they did. Yeah, they've been a you know, a consistent competitor in the CAA. So I would love to see Hofstra, you know, put some respect on Hofstra's name, you know?
You know, I agree. I think James Madison, I think, as you mentioned, their facility, they just opened a brand new arena. I've not been in person, but by God, that is a gorgeous arena. I think another school that is worth a look while we're on the topic of the conference, is Charleston, College of Charleston. They have a nice arena. They host an event every year. I think they would demand a good look. And the ironic thing, and I've had this discussion with the Giant Killer guys, is a school that would have fit well, and I don't know if they fit as well anymore, but at the time that the CAA broke up, when George Mason and BCU came to the Atlantic 10, I think Old Dominion regrets not getting on the same train. I mean, I know they're stuck in football for whatever reason, but I feel like Old Dominion is just that have all the intangibles that make up a great Atlantic 10 school, and they would be a great addition, but I doubt they'd ever do it because of the football thing. And for the same reason, I did not include Western Kentucky in my list. I think they're a perfect logical school for the Atlantic 10. But again, the football thing is the hang up.
At what point, you know, you mentioned the football thing. At what point does the football thing stay too much of a hang up that the A10 becomes a football conference? Do you ever see that happening? I mean, we've got seven football schools in the conference right now, you know, thrown around various spots in the FCS and in the FBS. But do you ever see that in the A10's immediate future?
You know, it's funny, Anthony, you're shaking your head, but I don't think it's as ludicrous as it sounds. I mean, they did used to have it, and the Atlantic Sun just created a football conference for the very reason that Eastern Kentucky moved to the Atlantic Sun from, I believe, the OVC. I don't necessarily see it in the next 5-10 years, but I think it's something that the Atlantic 10 may consider, or may have to at the very least consider very seriously. If they want, it doesn't have to be FBS level. The A-Sun didn't make an FBS conference. It could be an FCS conference. God knows Richmond is a good enough football school to at the FCS level that they can make a run at it. It's an interesting conversation, but go ahead, Anthony. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No worries. I think it would kill the conference, and it would kill a lot of the other sports that come with the Atlantic 10. This is where I put on my former athlete hat. You would effectively get rid of St. Joe's LaSalle in a heartbeat. They don't have football, and all the other programs that can afford football that are state schools because they can actually hold that budget. I know Duquesne had a football team, but I mean, who's watching that football? I just don't see it. There's top 50 football, and then you're not watching anything else. And I think basketball people come to the campus. They actually enjoy it. It's more of an atmosphere, and these are historic basketball programs. I know football looks pretty, but as my inner accountant, I'm just calculating everything. I'm looking at all those scholarships and looking at all those people that are there, the facilities that are required. And then I look at revenue and viewership, and I just don't see it there. It's just, we're not going to turn George Mason into, Texas A&M football. It's never going to happen. We're in the Northeast. That is basketball culture. And if you do watch football, it's pro football. I know we talked about Temple. Not a lot of people go down to the link to watch Temple football. It's not near their campus. They drive all the way down Broad Street. And I just don't think they fill the stadium like that everyone says they do. Yeah, they played Notre Dame once on television. I just, it rings and it just kills Here's my bias. Kills sports like track and field. I'm going to defend track and field. Just don't do it. Don't go down that road, Daniel. Just don't do it.
You know, it's funny you bring up football because that is the number one topic of conversation in Fairfax is should George Mason have a football team? All the students want a football team because the thing would help school spirit. No one would go to those games. I'm sorry. People don't go to men's basketball games. They're not going to go to football. And, you know, there was a 5-10 years ago, the now Washington football team, then Washington Redskins, had a grant, was willing to give George Mason a grant of like $750,000 or something, some not insignificant amount of money to start up a FCS level football program, build a stadium that would replace George Mason stadium where soccer, track and field, et cetera, play. And the university balked at it. They decided to not go that direction. I think it's a good decision. I tend to agree that the FCS football is kind of at a weird crossroads in general. And that's a whole separate conversation we can have that maybe the A10 podcast is not the home for, but you know, I think you make a good point about just who cares about, you know, FCS football when it comes to, that's not the Atlantic 10's focus. It should not be the focus. And I wasn't trying to make the claim earlier that they should do it. I think it's something that they should consider. I wouldn't want it to happen from a personal standpoint, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, all great points. You know, I would never have thought about it from an athlete's perspective. I think, you know, I could totally see where, you know, the budget that football requires could, you know, end up hurting a sport like track and field or rowing or field hockey, et cetera, which, you know, are not sports that bring in the money, but I think are sports that are so important for creating, you know, a diverse athletic culture at a school. I mean, I guess I'm just biased because Fordham is a football school. Not that it's a great football school, but I think it's got the history behind it, which is why I think, you know, they've held on to it for so long. I mean, I don't think I can go to a Fordham football game without hearing Vince Lombardi's name thrown around 20,000 times, aside from the fact that he hasn't been at the school for 70 years. But just very interesting, you know, issues that will probably see affect the A-10, you know, in the next 5-10 years or so. But otherwise, great stuff. Thank you for coming on, guys. It's been a great time. And thank you, everyone, for checking out the very first, the very first of this year edition of the A-10 Talk podcast. We'll be back over the next couple weeks giving you individual breakdowns of all 14 schools in the conference. It's going to be a great time, and we're, you know, hoping everyone's very excited for the 2021-2022 season of college basketball. So thanks for coming on, guys. Have a great night.